ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
For decades, a quantum computer has been just around the corner. So, where is it?
If you'd asked me very early on, I would have been very pessimistic.
The race to build a quantum computer...
Then I got more pessimistic.
Can anyone actually do it?
And more pessimistic.
One of the biggest tech stories on Earth. I'm Jacinta Bowler. Search for Science Friction, Dead and Alive, on ABC Listen, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So where do you sit, Tegan?
In a chair.
Oh, good. Well, in that case, where do you sit on your chair with Ayurvedic medicine? Have you tried it out?
Well, not sort of intentionally trying out Ayurvedic medicine, but I do love yoga. You know, I've eaten things with turmeric in them. I think it has infused a lot of our lives in ways that maybe we're not realising, but I haven't actively sought it out.
So, I mean, we're talking here about ancient Indian practice, effectively, the same way as you've got Chinese medicine, which goes back thousands of years. You've got Ayurvedic medicine, which cuts across interventions which include philosophy, religion, and beliefs about the way the body works. That's what we're talking about here. But there's lots of interventions around. And there are people who do practice ancient Indian medicine in the form of Ayurvedic practice.
It's the sort of thing I think some people might look down their noses at a little bit, and I want to interrogate that a bit today.
On What's That Rash?
Which is the show where we answer the health questions that everyone is asking. So today's question comes from Wayne, and Wayne is asking a question, as we skillfully foreshadowed, about a particular ingredient in Ayurvedic medicine, so ashwagandha. Wayne says, I have a question regarding the effectiveness of ashwagandha in reducing cortisol levels and therefore perhaps some of the adverse consequences of stress. I see from a search or two on the internet that there is some indication that clinical trials show a reduction. Are those trials meaningful? Is the amount of reduction enough to offset high stress and warrant taking the supplement? Wayne, you are asking excellent questions. Because we're talking about a traditional medicine, as we said before. We're talking about evidence. And I think today, Norman, we're also going to end up talking about things like imperialism and colonialism, conflicts of interest. It is a very rich seam that Wayne has opened up with his question today.
But it starts with Withania somnifera.
Right, which is a mouthful, which is the Latin name for the plant that ashwagandha comes from.
It's an evergreen shrub cultivated in tropical and subtropical areas of Asia, Africa, and Europe.
But a fact that you just had on the top of your brain and definitely didn't read off a Wikipedia entry.
Tripped off the tongue.
So, do you know why it's called ashwagandha?
No, I don't know why it's called ashwagandha.
So that's the Sanskrit name for this plant, but the plant's roots are said to smell like a wet horse.
Yum.
Ashwa means horse and ganda for smell. So that's what we're saying when we're saying ashwagandha. We're saying effectively wet horse.
Is that a way of testing whether or not you've got genuine ashwagandha?
I think you need to have a wet horse nearby to compare the scent. So that is expensive as much as anything else. So, okay, let's talk about this plant, what we know about the plant.
Yeah, it's also called Indian winter cherry or Indian ginseng. And in fact, it's one of the core herbal medications of the Ayurvedic system and has apparently been used for millennia for its wide-ranging health benefits.
Yeah, sort of as a tonic, a kind of overall health tonic. And so that's not that uncommon in traditional medicines, that you might sort of have something that's like good for you in capital letters. But then the science is really about unpicking what the claims are and how well they're supported by the actions, which is really what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. But in Ayurvedic medicine, there is this mix, if you like, called rasayana, which is described as a herbal or metallic preparation. And they've been advertised for millennia as a, you know, inducing a youthful state of physical and mental health and expanding happiness, which goes to Wayne's question.
Yeah, so stress release, happiness, the Latin name that you said before, Withania somnifera, somni in the species name there indicates that it's sometimes used as a sleep aid, it promotes sleep. There's a lot of different health claims around here. I'm very curious to sort of pick apart what those claims are and how the science bears them out.
Because, of course, if you go look at the rasayana herbs, there's quite a few herbs in there, and it could be a mix. And ashwagandha is just one part of that mix, albeit an important part.
And even then, ashwagandha is sort of like a catch-all for this one plant. Sometimes what you're taking is a root extract. Sometimes it's a leaf extract. The chemical composition of the root and leaf differ? So there's a couple of different moving parts here.
There are, assuming that what you're buying is what is said on the label.
Right. Is this a good time to talk about what we're sort of up against when we're looking at something that's a supplement or approved for use as a supplement versus something that's approved for use as a medicine?
So it's a little less of a problem with ashwagandha than it is with other supplements. There are forms of ashwagandha which seem to have verified amounts in them that are more reliable products than just buying them online and hoping for the best. And some of those products have actually been used in clinical trials because standardization is a real problem.
Yeah, this really is a case study in unpicking the powers that be across supplement and drug industries and sort of where research comes from and how quality it is. Top line is that there is some claims that seem to be backed up by evidence that ashwagandha is good for stress and sleep and performance and those sorts of things. We'll dig into them in a second. I think one thing that would be good to highlight really early on, if we're talking about benefits, is to talk about some risks, because there are some potential serious health risks from this supplement as well.
So again, whether this is from ashwagandha itself or from contaminants, it's considered not safe in pregnancy or breastfeeding. It's not considered safe if you've got hormone-sensitive prostate cancer, because there is some evidence that it influences hormones such as testosterone, that you wouldn't have it at the same time as other sedatives because it may have a sedative effect. It may have an anti-clotting effect, so if you're having surgery, you wouldn't want to necessarily have it. There have been liver problems reported with ashwagandha. People get diarrhea, vomiting, drowsiness, upper gastrointestinal discomfort. And as we've said many times, if something is strong enough to have an effect on the body, even if it might be a 1,000-year-old herbal medicine, if it's strong enough to have an effect, it's strong enough to have side effects. There's just no such thing as an intervention which actually has biological benefits for the body without a biological downside. Just doesn't happen. And therefore, you can't just say, well, I'm having ashwagandha, it must be safe, it's got all these benefits. It's just like any other drug. It could have a problem. And liver injury is one of them.
Yeah, I think there's sometimes a sense that something natural is either good or benign. It's either doing you good or it's not doing anything. But what you're saying is if it has the power to do good, it has the power to do evil also.
Yeah. And there have been rare reports of fatal liver injury, you needing emergency liver transplantation, particularly in people who've got pre-existing liver disease and cirrhosis. And there's a lot of people now in the community with pre-existing liver disease because they've got fatty liver disease. So it's not, you can't just say, well, I haven't been drinking, therefore I've not got cirrhosis. Some people do have fatty livers, and ashwagandha could potentially interfere with that. But again, you just simply, it's so hard to tell whether it's ashwagandha or ashwagandha with contaminants.
Let's talk about the claims. Wayne kind of summarized some of them in his email. Basically, what I've been able to find is there's claims around improved sleep, stress and anxiety reduction, improving cognition, improving athletic performance, and boosting testosterone in men. Is there anything there I've missed?
Well,
when
you've got this broad spectrum of effects, it starts to lose believability.
But you just said if something could have an effect somewhere, it could have an effect somewhere else. It's plausible that this could do all of these things.
It is plausible. And because it's a herbal product, it's got lots of different things in it. And as you quite rightly said at the beginning, depending on where they've taken it from, which species of plant they've taken it from, it could have a different mix of active compounds in them. So not all would necessarily produce that effect. The other effect that people have noticed when they look at it in the test tube is that it promotes a process called apoptosis.
Cell death.
Cell death, natural cell death. And some cancers, if not all cancers, and a lot of this work has been done at the Walter and Eliza Hall Institute in Melbourne, at least some cancers are a failure of natural cell death. So cells are born, cells live, do their job, and then cells die. And apoptosis is one of the processes that gets rid of these of cells in that natural cycle. And when apoptosis fails, the risk is that you get cancer. And in the test tube, ashwagandha preparations seem to induce apoptosis, which in theory could help if you already have a tumour.
Okay, so some pretty big claims here. Whenever we're thinking about something with anti-cancer properties, the hype meter goes all the way up to 11. Let's start with the crux of Wayne's question, which is really about stress and anxiety. What do we know?
Well, what we know from reviews of the evidence, and you've got to be careful with reviews of the evidence, because when reviews of the evidence bring together the available studies, but when the available studies lack credibility or lack methodological rigor, you're just adding up errors in your systematic review. A lot of the research has been done in India, as you might imagine. You know, this is not particular to India. There are plenty of lousy randomized controlled trials done all over the world. But a lot of the research into ashwagandha is not necessarily standardized to preparations. There are small studies, difficult to measure outcomes. The placebo is not necessarily a true placebo, if indeed there's a placebo at all, because the ashwagandha itself causes side effects and it's possible to recognize when you're taking it versus placebo. So when you look at that methodological rigor, some of these studies really start to fall apart. Nonetheless, there's been West Australian research, US research, which have tried to standardize for the preparation of ashwagandha and seem to find signals of positive effects on stress, anxiety, depression, even food cravings. And again, how can you say that about one thing? Because it's not one thing. It's a melange of different substances which can have varying effects, you know, each on their own, which is why the pharmaceutical industry has an interest in ashwagandha, are one or two of these constituents of ashwagandha possible drugs for the future?
And then one of the things, we didn't say it explicitly before, but there's a lot of recommendations around not taking this supplement for more than about 12 weeks at a time, because that can increase your risk of the liver side effects that you mentioned before. So it's not like you kind of go on this as an alternative to going on a long-term drug. Like, this is a short-term maybe help.
Well, again, you don't get the benefit without the downside. And what people have not shown is whether or not most of the studies are short term without long term safety. And you don't know the relapse rate. You don't know head to head whether it's better than having psychotherapy, for example, or better than having an SSRI. What's it like head to head with other treatments?
Okay, so I'm getting a bit of a hand-wavy outcome with the stress and anxiety reduction, that perhaps there's a signal there, but it's hard to say what the long-term effects are. What about, okay, we're talking about something, species name Somnifera. Sleep-inducing is another sort of promise of ashwagandha. What does the science tell us?
Again, I'm not going to go over all the caveats that I've just had, but they apply to the sleep research as well. But if you synthesize it, if there is a sleep effect, it seems to be more prominent in people with insomnia rather than just, you know, have trouble getting off to sleep once and every so often. And what we still, again, don't know about sleep is, does it restore a normal sleep pattern? What happens when you stop it? There are very effective treatments for insomnia, usually based on psychotherapy rather than drugs. And drugs are not recommended over an extended period of time. So it's quite possible it has a somnolent effect. I mean, and there are other things in the ashwagandha as well, which it's not entirely obvious why it would have an effect on stress, anxiety, and sleep, because a lot of the beneficial compounds, the appearing compounds in ashwagandha, seem to be having antioxidant effects on the body. So they maybe anti-inflammatory effects. So they slow down the tissue aging process, the oxidative stress. They may reduce inflammation and so on. And that could happen in the brain too, which is why some people think it might have a benefit on cognitive function. Again, not great research in that area. A little bit of a signal that it might do that. Again, because of the mix of compounds in there, and some may actually have an effect on brain inflammation. We don't know.
So you mentioned cognition in there. I don't want to get too repetitive. Let's barrel through to one of the ones that doesn't seem to sit well alongside sleep: improved athletic performance.
Well, I mean, I don't want to bag this completely, but again, because of the breadth of effects of the various compounds within ashwagandha, it's possible that through anti-inflammatory effects, it's possible if it does for some reason, and there is a little bit of laboratory evidence that it might boost testosterone levels and might boost DHEA, which is a precursor of testosterone. It's possible that you are getting effects on muscle tissue, which could improve adaptation to resistance training, for example. So it's not out of court that it could have this effect. But again, you need better research to be sure.
It's hard to have a conversation like this without sounding maybe a little bit snobby, like a little bit like, well, Western medicines have been studied in this sort of way. And there's sort of like a residual effect that these have been considered to be alternative medicines for a very, very long time. We're starting to get that science coming through. It's still pretty equivocal, as you're saying, Norman. What kind of heft of research would you need to be satisfied that there was a true signal here?
Well, it's research that you'll never get because it's so expensive to do, and it's drug companies who fund it. And this is the problem, where you have potentially useful products out there, but they never get studied. I mean, aspirin was a classic example for decades. Some signals that it's really good for after a heart attack, to 25 years for that to be nailed, because it required public funding of research to prove it, because no drug company was going to make money out of aspirin. So this is the problem that you've got here. I mean, where I would sit just looking at the research for this What's That Rash would be, if you're going to try ashwagandha, try it in small doses in a standardized extract. We can't tell you what they are. We're not going to, that's where angels fear to tread. But do your research, find that out, and certainly don't buy it on the internet. Buy it from somebody that you can look in the eye over the counter, can tell you what the provenance is. And the important thing with all these complementary medicines, because they do have an effect, is let your GP know you're on them. People are frightened to tell your GP because you think you're going to get slammed. But good GPs will just be grateful to know you're on them, because there can be interactions. There can be interactions with, you know, drugs to stop your blood clotting and what have you. So it's just really useful to know, especially if you're heading for surgery. So make sure that they go into your notes so that people know you've got them, and watch it carefully, because there are side effects.
Because as we said before, liver damage is one of the big kind of top line potential risks here.
And that's the problem with some of these randomized trials, is they don't report on side effects or complications. So if you see a randomized trial which doesn't report on side effects or complications, or say there were none, you'd be running for the hills. You wouldn't be relying on that study at all, because it's impossible to have something that's effective without side effects.
And liver. And so what we're seeing, this once it's in market, we're sort of starting to see these reports coming out.
Yeah. And as we know, our regulators are not necessarily great at responding to problems that they see in the marketplace.
I know you hate it when I ask you to pull out your crystal ball, Norman, but I'm going to ask you to pull out your crystal ball. If you were looking forward in 10 years into the future, what do you imagine we will see coming out of this space?
I think you'll see the occasional medication emerging out of this space. The pharmaceutical industry puts a lot of money into looking at herbal products to see if they can find something useful out of it. You'd have thought with ashwagandha, since it's so common, if there was something useful in it, they would have found it already. But these things take a while to evolve and emerge onto the market. So it's unclear at the moment what's going to happen. So you could see the results. But I think in 10 years' time, we've been using traditional medications. People like the idea of traditional medications, traditional substances like this. And I suspect you're still going to see it being used, because people like the idea of it. It feels more natural than modern medicine. Personally, give me the wires, the concrete, and the things that go ping every time.
And I mean, it doesn't all have to be things that go ping. We did actually talk about chronic stress and stress relief last week. If you would like some evidence-based, natural stress relief techniques, go back and listen to last week's What's That Rash?
With very few side effects, if any.
Well, Wayne, thank you so much for the question. We love getting your questions. You can send them to thatrash@abc.net.au.
And, you know, we'd like to hear from you about what you've learned from What's That Rash? How's it helped you, if at all? Have you come a cropper because of What's That Rash?
Norman just wants your positive feedback. Norman wants a gold star.
Yeah,
from
just give the negative stuff to Tegan and the positive stuff to me. Have you done some extra research, made any changes, done an N of one trial? We love N of one trials. And have you found an alternative to the
Mediterranean diet?
Of course.
You can email us thatrash@abc.net.au.
See you next week.
See you then.